Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others.
That's why we're so passionate about now with connecting to me, for me, and I do it if there's an opening. I'm like you say, Zen, if there's not an opening, I don't go there. If everybody, you know, if somebody's happy where they're at, God bless them. It's none of my business. But if I see someone suffering, we have a radio show called Heart to Heart that we do every other week. And it's like when people come on, I want to validate them. I want to say, I hear you. I feel your pain. And there's life after. And that's what a great teacher told me. I understand you, Dan. I feel your pain. I feel your hurt. But do you want to get better? Do you want to stay here? I want to get better. I want to be like you. I want to have a nice home and I want to have a blah, blah, blah. And I want to be somebody. There's something in me that's bigger than me, that's calling to me. We're made in God's image. How big could we be? We're a universe, really. This is a universe. Just talk to different people. You know, the only thing that clamps you down or me down is limiting beliefs.
Yes, 100%.
And lots of dreaming.
We're infinite.
Dreaming and imagination. You know, that's one thing that I've been.
I had a hard time, didn't I?
Yeah, Dan said to me several times, Angela, you know, you imagine all this stuff. He goes, I don't know why, but I can't imagine. Well, I realize now that he really did, because he had a few dreams, like writing a book and, some traveling. You know, he did have some dreams, but his imagination was really shut down. He couldn't imagine. He I don't know what was stuck about it, but he said he would struggle to dream and imagine. And I think, wow, to think that a religion could shut you down that hard and fast that you don't even have dreams. It was
the only thing to hope for was paradise.
Soon, yeah, you know? I was just going to say that. You know, so that's all you could think of, like what paradise
but
maybe
I
might
wanted
be.
To tell Zen something. You know, have you ever heard of inner child journey? Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Inner child, no. Tell us.
Of course.
I'll just go through it real quick. But I was in a class in a new thought church, and they said there was this thing called an inner child journey. And I said, do you think I need to go? And everyone's like, you need to go. And I was like, what is it? Nobody would tell you what it was. And so I went in this room with about 300 people. The windows were blocked off. It was all closed off. And we broke into groups, and they literally went through your life. You know, the pains, the what did God look like to you? You know what I'm saying?
Everybody, they're all different religions. Were in this
so mainly, so say I broke into this group. They say, what did God look like when you were young, Dan? I said, well, you be the elder. You be Jehovah behind the elder, pissed off and angry and going to genocide everybody.
Using
today.
People to make this
Using people.
Sculpture.
So this guy was behind the brother, behind the watchtower and the conductor. And the guy's like this, that's Jehovah. And then the watchtower reader was like this. And the guy who's conducting the watchtower was like this. So they're there. And then they said, where were you? And they said, in this row here. I started bawling. I started crying. And they're like, what's wrong? And I said, why is Jehovah so angry? And who in the hell are these people between me and Jehovah? Who are these numbskulls? And why are we in the back of the hall just sitting there like this, wasted garbage? And that changed me forever. But here's the beautiful thing. I looked around the room and 300 people were crying. I can't touch God.
They all had their stories. They were telling
They all were telling the Catholic story, the Baptist story. The people were saying they got raped and abused. Anyway, long story short, I went through all this. I got my crying out. It changed me forever. But at the end, here's what they did. This is beautiful. Mm. At the end, they made a tunnel with people. You put your hands up like this.
Wait, put your hands
up. Yeah, like this. You're like this.
Okay, like that. Yeah.
And there were people all the way down. And it was a birth canal. that you were coming through. So they were over there. So it's this long line of people.
Ribs, you know.
And as you were coming through, Zen, they were saying, "We love you. Now you're being born. We are so looking forward to you. We are so glad you're here. Oh my God, you're going to be."
You're going to write your book.
Yeah, you wrote the thing. "We're so excited to see the books you're going to write." I didn't write shit before that. And they're like, "We're so glad. Oh my God, a child's born." And it was like Jesus coming through, right?
And everything you told them that you dreamed of, they were repeating to you.
They were all whispering as you come to this tunnel. When you came out, they had a birthday cake. And they said, "Yeah, we're so glad you're here." And it blew my freaking mind. It blew my mind. I thought that's the way it should be.
Amen.
God, what God birthed is good and very good. It's not junk. It's not crap. It's you are made in the image and likeness of God. And God, you know, he wants us to bring that facet. You, me, all of us are a facet of God, unique to everybody else. We're going to shine in a way unlike anybody else shines. It's your fingerprint. It's your signature. And if we'll allow it, the Spirit can shine through in a way that this world needs right now. The world is waiting for the real you and the real me to show up as us. Not a program. Not I'm a left, I'm a right, I'm a Democrat, I'm a this. How does pure love show up as you and me and Angela and everybody else? We move into that, it'll shift the world.
Yeah, and Dan, how do we get there? How do we get there? Let's talk about how do we get there.
Go ahead.
You know, I don't know. I just think that it's this. It's just keeping on, like Louise Hay said, you got to just start deciding that I love myself. That's something that the witnesses told us, and my church taught us. We were really pieces of shit, right? We're good for nothing. And so you got to change your mind about that. And you got to start saying, no, literally, like Dan says, you have to have a song in your heart. It's constantly kind of saying this, "Thy will be done, Lord, not my will, but thine be done," all the time, every day. So then you're kind of at peace knowing that God's wills be done. That's number one. Number two is that there's a surrender to that. That it's not, "I'm God now." It's that I give this reins over to the real God. And then expecting good in your life to come about and starting to go towards those dreams and saying positive things, beginning to go around saying, "You know what? I am the light of the world. You know what? God loves me and all the universe is for me and not against me. And, you know, God's got great plans for me and he's going to prosper me. And I think he's going to bless me on this project. And I feel he's wanting me to kind of go for it. So I'm going to make some phone calls today." And you just start like saying, "I love myself because God loves me. And if I don't love myself, then I'm calling God a liar because he said that I'm good and very good and that he loves me and that I'm the apple of his eye." And so he starts saying these things a lot, and you go to classes, you read books that back that up, and you do everything in your power. You pray and ask God to change your mind about yourself and how you feel about yourself and how you feel about him. And you keep asking and you keep telling him what you see is weak in yourself, that you don't think you should have it that way, and ask him to change it. And you just keep on doing every little thing that seems to be putting in your path, maybe a class you feel that you should take. It's just these little things loosen you, like Dan taking that class on the inner child journey and learning what's really going on with me and God and these elders that are between me and God, and God really wants to birth this beautiful, you know, this child that he loves, that I'm being rebirthed. And I think that whole thing is God rebirthing us, is by he's leading you to watch a certain movie, read a certain book, take a certain class, say a certain prayer, continue in your heart with certain mantras, if you will, certain sayings, certain affirmations, and slowly but surely God is just changing us from glory to greater glory. And I think that he is transmuting us, he's quickening us. We ask for him to quicken us, to transmute our weaknesses into something that's godly and good and helpful and giving and loving, and he does.
And that's what's making the trek back home, prodigal son. And what he said when you come back home was, "Everything that I have is yours. Everything I have is yours." The ring is established. And that's what all of this searching for the ark, you know, the angel's wings, you know, right here are angel's wings. In between the angel's wings is where the Shekinah glory is, in between your temple. They say the right and left brain are like angel wings, the ark of the covenant. And everything's in that. the budding rod, the manna, the perfect food. That's the spiritual dimension that we're communing with. And it's communing directly with our temple. That's the beautiful thing. That's why we have to get out of other understanding that hinders that. The truth is, people ask me every time, well, where's Christ? Same place he was 2,000 years ago. In between the two polar opposites right here, right and left brain. Right in the same place, right in the middle, the spiritual dimension is activated. The third eye is activated when the two become one. It's a Christmas tree. The two become one, the eye becomes single, and the whole tree becomes bright.
And just to back that up in scripture, it says it in the Bible that Jacob met God in Peniel. So now people think that as an
where does action. God meet man in Peniel?
people think that Peniel for Jacob was an actual physical town or whatever, you know, but the truth is most spiritual people understand that he met God in his spirit.
Golgotha,
and
skull
met,
place.
And the
place
ladder,
of the skull.
The ladder was there that goes from, you know, us to God. The ladder was there, Jacob's ladder, but it was all the fight probably with him. And I don't know, it might've been physical too, but at least he met God in Peniel. So I'll even say to God, Lord, I'll meet you in Peniel. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll meet you in the secret place. The
Holy of Holies.
In the Holy of Holies. I'll meet you, you know, where you are. And so anyway, I just think that's important to know that Peniel is not just a made up thing that spiritual people have come up with, but Jacob talked about that.
They used to sing it in the churches. They used to say, commune with me in between the angels' wings. Commune with me. And they got rid of that. Commune with me. In between the angels' wings, come into union with me in here. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful song, but they got rid of it in most churches because it talks about oneness. It talks about divine union. So they don't want us in divine union. They want us in union to their priests and pastors and all those sort of things. Anyway, that's controversial. But
so why do you think, because as I'm living life and you're talking all this stuff and they're true and it's, you living and it's your experience and I feel it and I've experienced similar. And it's the most freeing and beautiful, loving feeling and thing ever. And why do you think, if you ever thought of that, why religion is basically don't want you to know these things or even experience them. They want to shut you down and making you feel like shit. Like what's in it for them to have you feel this? Because if everyone is free, there'll be less murder, there'll be less violence, there'll be less all the bad stuff they're telling you not to do anyway. It doesn't compute. What do you think about that? Like,
you know, to me, it just seems like power. It's like, it doesn't matter where you go, they have a tapestry and a reward, meaning they have an ideal. If you go into the Mormons, there's a tapestry. We believe in covenants and doctrines. Well, what the hell's that? Well, look here, what it says in the Bible, that God would have a covenant with his people today. Well, actually, it says God would have a prophet today. Did you know there was a prophet today? Moroni? Did you know he was a prophet? So if you follow that tapestry, there's a good chance you'll become a Mormon. If you meet a Seventh-day Adventist, they're going to lay out their tapestry. Here's our tapestry. Everything's in the first five books of the Bible. We don't need to go any further. Ellen White's our prophet. Do you keep the Sabbath? Do you keep the holy days? You know, so on and so forth. So they all have a tapestry, and they're all invested into the tapestry. And to me, what I've found, because we've went into a lot of different churches, and probably over 200, and what we found is we end up arguing. If we share a perspective that's outside of their belief system, until that's why it has to
even
happen,
if it's like, in the Bible.
Like Zen said, one at a time. See, the spiritual rebirth, the real, you know, they throw around that name, born again, born of the spirit, but it's born of a spirit, not religiosity. And what happens is the actual birth of the spiritual dimension of the Christos within us is an immaculate conception, meaning it is done by God's own hand. That rebirth isn't done by some pastor telling you to stand up and come down and say you believe in Jesus. It's bigger. It's heart. It's I die to self. It's the death of the ego. As I was crucified, Jesus says, I did it for you all. No, he said, as I was crucified, you will be crucified and you will be crucified if you want to follow the same path, which means the death of the ego. So Jesus came in, it says, fully man, right? And then they took out the part where we could actually see him as a human like us, right? And they just make him a god. Constantine says, unless you worship Jesus as God, I'm going to kill you. That's why Constantine killed Christ. That's why the Catholics did the Inquisitions. If you didn't believe Jesus was God, you were dead. They forced that belief that Jesus was God. And so what happened was,
in a certain way, now
think about it. Jesus said, the things that you do and greater you'll do. Well, does that make us God? Does that make me God? Did Jesus say that? He said, the Father is greater than me and the Father does the work in me. I do nothing of my own initiative. So he was surrendered to the spiritual dimension that wanted to come through him. And he was humble. And so I don't know. I just see people are born into these ideas. Like I was born vested into Jehovah's Witness ideology. I was indoctrinated into fear. I was immobilized. But something in me tapped me on the shoulder. Divine discontent tapped me on the shoulder and said, come, do you want out of this limitation? Now, guess what? I'm not the only one who's got to do it. And I can't do it for you or you or you or you. I said, I want out. I don't know where the hell I'm going, God. I don't know what I'm doing. I need out. Please help me get out. And he did. And or it did. I don't want to say the he. But I think everyone's got to transcend. I don't care if you're Buddhist, Hindu, whatever, I think it's all the same thing. Do we want to step out of this illusion of religiosity and really become one with our brother? How in the hell can you love somebody if you say, I am a Christian, I am a Jehovah's Witness? Because here's the true teaching behind it. If you say, I am a witness, then you have to believe that Jehovah is going to destroy, genocide everyone outside the door of the kingdom hall. Christianity, same thing. Same damn thing. It's unless you believe in Jesus, by God, he's coming. And by God, he's going to have bloodshed. So as I visited these 200 churches, I was like, ew. You know, it's more genocide. Why is Jesus going to kill everybody? Is he a freaking narcissist? Is Jesus nuts as Jehovah was? I said, Jehovah was nuts. I mean, you're telling me God is going to genocide his own kids? You're telling me there's people born. Think about this, Zen. In Israel, there's four different major religions. If you were born on one of those continents, you would be one of those religions.
Right there. You know, it's like four and right? Corner.
If you were a Buddhist, you'd be meditating. You'd be, you know, you'd be doing this, you know, you'd be, if you were a Tibetan monk, if you were a Baptist, Islam. You'd be a Baptist. Right. Jesus said, Father, forgive us for we don't know what we do. And here's the beautiful thing. As I was lost in Jehovah's Witnesses for 40 years, that's the humbling. I realized they're going to be lost in their ideal. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. You know, they're going to be lost in the, we're right. And we're, I just see the patterns going on and on. And then I see the person blossom, come out. Oh my God, it was bigger than I thought. And then they're humbled. And then they don't, not so much knowing anymore. I don't know. That's a good question. But I'm going to tell you something else. I'll tell you what else it is. It's power. I look at the governing body. There's a power, man, that you're wielding around 8 million people. We were in a church over here, a Christian church. We walked in, and this man was so angry, Zen. He was so angry, wasn't he? He you remember over on Chinden? He got up there and he says, by God, if you hear the word spirit, run. If you hear metaphysics, run. If you hear, do not listen. It's all in the word of God right here. You don't need anything else but this
big
church.
Church.
And
big
I mean, he
church.
was scaring. I mean, those people were like, and he was like, stay here, because if you leave, I'm not going to be fed. I'm not going to make my people above me happy. I'm not going to, you know what I mean? It's an infrastructure. But Jesus said, come out of Babylon the Great. Come out from Babel. Come out from BS. Come out. And I'm telling you, Zen, you know this. How can you really love them? You know, we were at the door. How can you really love them when you're thinking they're going to die? I used to walk away. I don't know if you did. You probably didn't. But we used to walk away and say, you're dead. You didn't listen to Jehovah.
Yeah.
Jehovah, we're going to get their house.
And arrogant. Yeah. Yeah. And very unloving. It made me sick too. It made me sick, like thinking people were, my classmates were disgusting because they weren't Jehovah's Witness or they had a birthday in class. And yeah, it was like a conflict because I was like, that's not loving, but I'm taught to be loving, but then I'm also taught to be hateful. Like it's contradictory.
I've been reading this book called Discover the Power Within You by Eric Butterfield. You know, and he really just really helps you understand that we've been in just kind of a matrix of people wanting you to find God, and everybody in the church content for you to only find God from these outside ways of being and believing, and absolutely never ever work in showing the example of going within or finding God within or developing that relationship with God within. They're trying to make us satisfied all the time with all these outside things that, that we do. And Dan and I kind of seen it as different tribes. Everybody wants you to be in their tribe and exclusive with their tribe and do exactly the things they do. And if you're slightly off in any way, they're going to sit down with you and let you know that you need to change your view. And if you don't, you're going to be kicked out of here. We were not going to accept you in our group. And
You're on a time frame.
And you better get it right within a time frame. And you better join as a member within a time frame or you're out. And very strict. And, you know, Jesus, when he came on the scene, this is exactly what he had going on. Exactly this. All about power and control. I mean, in the churches, that pastor and those whatever have the right to kick you out of their church if you don't abide by their rules. So they're anxious to get you as a member because then you've agreed to the rules. So Dan and I knew never to do that. But then eventually you're like, you know, you got to choose. You got to become a member or you're out of here. Besides, you talk about weird stuff that we don't believe in here. We're tolerating you right now, but pretty soon we can't do this anymore. And we eventually know, and then they kind of let you know it's time for you to go. And it's always a sad thing because we love these people, you know, but they're stuck because they have to abide by these rules. And Jesus made it very clear, as this Eric Butterfield, that we've got to go against their will, because if we go within, then we find the true power of who each of us is. And it's mighty and it's powerful and it's doing these and greater things you will do, Jesus said. Don't marvel at these things. And they don't want that. The powers to be want you to stay very dumbed down and stuck. And I believe, truthfully, I really do believe that there's great religions are kind of under what I call a very elite class. We don't know it, but I do believe that the Jehovah's Witness leaders worldwide, Mormon, different ones, have kind of decided that we are going to dumb down the people to get us under control. And this, they all came up with their little plan to see whose plan worked the best. And I'm not kidding. I really do believe this. And it's worked. It's worked. It's really been quite a contest. And how much they could dumb us down, how much they can make us weak and obey orders and not question. And so here we are, just like when Jesus came on the scene and he was just like doing all kinds of things, saying no, 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 and no. And it made them really mad until the point that they're like, you know what? If we don't kill this guy, he's going to take away our jobs. He's going to take away our authority, our money, everything. And we can't have it. He has got to go.
Well, what a narcissism.
Yeah. And so here we are. Anybody that tries to speak out and try to show something different, that's something beautiful, that's a deep relationship with God that actually results in that person becoming pretty powerful and pretty amazing and making a lot of changes in a lot of lives, then they want to kill that person. And we see it same today as in Jesus's day. But should we stop being that light on a hill and stop growing because people are going to hate us? I say no way. We got to keep on growing anyway. And well, Jesus said they're going to treat you the way they treated me. So be it. But he encouraged us to be like him, and he's the way shower. And it so shows that in the Bible. And anyway, people don't want to go there. They just want to follow the rules. And truthfully, that is works. And no matter how you look at it, if you're going to follow rules of men or rules of even the Bible, rules, you know, it's not really about all of that. It's about relationship. And God said so. He said, it's by grace you're saved through faith in him. That's how Abraham got it right with God, is through his faith in God. I believe that you are, and that you're a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. He lived that. And so, but he said that it's not of works, and unless any man should boast. And so he makes it clear that it's by grace and grace and faith alone, lest any man should boast, because it's God who's doing the work. I'm missing the verse a little bit. By grace, you're saved through faith. This not of yourselves. He said, this is not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, lest any man should boast. So What will we boast about? What could we possibly boast about? Oh, well, God, I kept this law and that law, and I didn't break the Sabbath, and I didn't go dating with girls or whatever it is. I didn't. I did it exactly right. And so I'm right with you, right? And God's like, I'm sorry, but I never knew you. You just obeyed rules. We're in here for relationship. You know, it's relationship.
So anyway, wow. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Life, what is it called? Rohr says life as
participation.
Life as participation.
Richard Rohr is an old priest. Yeah, is he still alive or did he die? No, he's still alive. Still alive, thank God. Yeah.
Right. Well, if you can share with us, how were you able to get rid of shame, guilt, and the fear and the judgment you have upon yourself, feeling like when they were trying to make you feel low and you went rise above that?
You want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay, I'll go first. Well, it was in Genesis, right? When I read the book of Genesis, the question I asked was this: did God know it was going to fall? Okay. Did God know? He's Alpha and Omega, right? You're going to love this because I'm telling you, when people get this, they're going to be free. I promise you. Did God know it was going to fall? Now, if people are honest, fundamentalist Christians, Jehovah's Witnesses, whatever, if they believe the Bible's, you know, the word of God, right, that's actually how it happened in Genesis, right? I'm just saying, if you believe that, then you would have to believe that God would know it was going to fall. He's Alpha and Omega. He didn't go, oh, my God, are they going to eat from the tree of knowledge? Is Satan going to deceive them? Oh, my God. No, God knew. What would that mean if God knew it was going to fall? Now, think about this. I'm going to give you another thing to think about. If, and this is leading to the shame and the guilt, but if you had a factory that you just put together, Ford Motor Company, and you clicked on the line and everything's going and you're going, oh my God, look at this wonderful creation I just did. The cars are being built. And you saw the union stewards outside the door. They pry the door open. They get in, they're going down the line saying, you guys are being screwed. They're making all the money, you know? What would you do with the union stewards? Would you let them poison the people's minds or would you get rid of them? You would get rid of them. You'd call the cops, you'd tackle them, you'd knock them down, you'd throw them out of the building, you'd reinforce the door. Why did not God do that with Satan? Why? It's the same story as the prodigal son. Man had to go out and learn. Now think about this. Did Satan lie? Satan says, I tell you today, you will not die. Did they die on that day? They died. They didn't die in the thousandth day. So they died at 900 years old. So, okay, he's right. Satan says, I tell you today, you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. Read down to verse 21. There's a dialogue, Elohim 2, and it says, they become like us, knowing good and evil. Did they become like God, knowing good and evil? Yes. Jesus or Jehovah or one of them, the two were dialoguing. And they said, what should we do? And then they said, well, by God, don't let them eat from the tree of life. Well, hold it. You said the day they're eating from that tree, they would die. Now you're saying, don't let them get to that tree because they'll live?
Well, that was a tree of life, though.
Right. But once they ate from that tree, they were dead. It wouldn't have mattered if they ate from the tree of life. You see what I'm saying?
There were two trees. I mean, there's the
tree. I know. Tree? But the day you're eating from that tree, they're dead, right? They didn't die. Now it came into another tree, came into the picture. The day you're, don't let them eat from that tree. So there's some kind of confusion there. And it says they become like us. So they said, well, what do we do? They said, well, get them out of the garden so they don't eat from the other tree. Put the flaming, you know, whatever. So did God intend us to go out and play good and evil? Mm-hmm. Did God allow us to be like himself? Okay, go play God. Jesus said in what is it, Deuteronomy, ye are gods. He said, lead the nations. Ye are gods. Get up. What did he say? Get up
and lead the nations, but you won't.
He said, get up and lead the nations. You are gods. So we had the ability, we have the ability today to choose good and evil. I can go out and kill 20 people right now, or I can love 20 people, or I can screw over 20 people. So my question is this. what kind of God are you? What kind of God are you? Mm-hmm. What kind of God am I? Do I like the person I'm at? How can I be different? God, help me be different than what I am. I don't want to be like this. So I think my guilt ended when I realized that God allowed me to play both good and evil. God allowed it. Now think about this, and I can back it up. My father is like this, prodigal son. Had two sons, one stayed home, one went away.
He said, my father's like this, and told that story.
Jesus said, my father is like this. A certain man had two sons, one left. What'd the one do who left? Screwed up his life, right? And God gave him the money to do it. I told that to a priest one day. I said, you know, God gave him the money to go out and have those whores. You know, it says he had loose living. I said, God actually paid him. Which all it means is God said, it's your life. Go out and play good and evil. Go out and do the bad. Learn from the bad. Jesus learned from what he suffered. And play with that, and then get burned by it, and then get notched back onto the road to life. And I think that's what we've been here to do, is learn good and evil, you know, that sort of thing. Go ahead.
Can I just add to that?
Yeah.
So you know what touches me about the whole thing is that I think that when you're wooing a woman, or a woman's trying to get a man, you're trying to not force it, right? It's got to be your choice. And so if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, you know, you're trying to woo them, but it's still their choice. Well, if you all you knew in the garden was only good, and everything was always perfect, you never had to choose anything, then is there any choice in that matter? There isn't. There's no choice at all. And yet in a love relationship, which God is trying to develop with us, I really do believe, then you've got to have choices. So if you don't have the other side of the story, then you don't have a choice. So once they had that knowledge of the evil, now they already had the good. They had been living in a paradise, and now they had the evil. Now they have to choose. Now they have to decide. And I think that, you know, God let them know one side of it first. I truly, with all my heart, because it says that God knows everything. So he knew that they were going to eat from that tree eventually, and that it was going to be time for you to graduate, be teens now, and go out into the world. And now you're going to have to experience the evil. And it says in the Bible that God made good and evil. Now that is a freak thing to think about.
Well,
that. How
do we know goodness if we don't know evil?
Yeah, well, right. And how are we going to be refined by refiner's fire if all there is good? If all we ever do is live in a paradise, that doesn't make sense. How could you be changed? How could you build character? How could anything come about that's of any good? If all you ever have is pure paradise, it had to be that got brought into the picture. And it said God made good and evil. And so it's for our good. And so Christians don't like that. They don't even want to go there. Like,
that's
just
what the Bible
get Satan out of here. Get, oh my gosh, I hate Satan. Just get him out of here. But the truth is,
we got kicked out of a church, by the way, for saying that God allowed it. He just allowed Satan to come down and trick him. He knew he was more knowledgeable. And they said, don't ever bring that up in my church again. I said, well, that's what the Bible says.
Right. But you know, the truth is that now came the training wheels. And so God said that, now, just like Dan said, God said that my father is like this. He had two sons, and so they both were learning. One was having to learn to love the unconditionally, not judge, just kiss daddy's ass, if you don't mind my saying it that way. The other son decided, I just want to go out on my own, and I want to experience for myself. And God's like, okay, good. And he probably thought this, it's like, okay, good. The sooner the better. Because then you're going to get to the end of the road, because I know everything, and you're going to be back. And then we'll be finally one, because you will have spent your wad, if you will. You will have gone down all the roads, and now you're sick of it. You're sick of yourself. You've already known what's down that road now, and you're done with it. And now you're back. The other son hadn't even gone on his journey yet. He was still kissing daddy's ass and getting everything he wanted, and he was spoiled, and he was rotten. He needed to go down that road too, and he had to be next. But
There was no guilt either.
No.
You know, when he came home, he wasn't begging the father.
No.
The father didn't even want to hear his plea.
No.
You know?
Didn't he put the robe on him. He put the signet ring, and the signet ring symbolizes you have authority in this family to sign documents. It's got a stamp to it. It's authority. And he made a big, huge display of a big party to celebrate in his return and restored him, it says, you know, took his shame away. And his brother was not content with that. It's like, no, you wasted half of dad's inheritance. But the father said, father's like this, he allows this. So what a wonderful God. Jesus is like this. He knows we're going to come down, go on this prodigal son journey. But when we're done with this journey, knowing good and evil and choosing, then we're back and we're tight and we're in love. And we love God, and we know that he wasn't trying to cheat us of anything, and he allowed us to choose. And we had to discover for ourselves. We would never be content unless we got to figure it out for ourselves. Like, teenagers are like that.
And so that's what I wanted to say about the teenager. You know, so many times we cripple them. I knew a guy that was, he bragged about all the women he laid. He's a Christian. And then his kid couldn't masturbate. He saw break his neck, and he was a big guy. And I says, oh my God. You know, like, you can't allow him to go down his prodigal son journey. See, when you talk about the mind of Christ or the mind of God, when you're big enough, you can allow somebody to go down the road. You look at your daughter, right? My daughter, right? I see him go down these different roads, and I'm like, God bless you, because I know they're going to learn. I know their roads. Maybe I didn't go down. I didn't go down certain drug roads and stuff or different things, but I just go, God bless them. And it's a different than the judgment, because if you think of sin as just missing the mark, that's all sin means, missing the mark. If you look it up, missing the mark, who doesn't miss the mark? So we're missed the markers instead of what the church has laid upon us, sinners. You know, you're losers. Saved by grace. One man had to come and die. I told somebody that one time. I said, imagine sitting your son down and saying, now listen, son, you know, you're really no good. You know, through and through, you're no good. And this one man is coming that is going to die for you, and he's going to die a hard death, and he's going to, and you are, but remember always, you are no good. You're, you know, when you wish to do right, bad is present, miserable man that you are. I said, could you imagine telling that to a young man? That's why that prodigal journey had such a big, not prodigal journey, but the inner child journey had such a big thing, that I was supposed to be here. I'm supposed to learn from what I suffer. I'm supposed to make mistakes. I'm supposed to go too far with the girl. I'm supposed to make whatever mistakes or do whatever, because I'm always going to be in a thing of readjusting, coming back into alignment, you know, and
learning humility.
And here's the beautiful thing. If I can do that for me, if I can love me and my darkness and my side that's not perfected yet, I can love yours too.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I've gotten there. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. So the two questions I had, if I can remember the other one. So the first one is, why are they, if that's a proper word to use, stifling a person for you not to make mistakes? Because I've spoken to so many people, it seems like, especially in the Jehovah's Witness or at least any other religion, they suffocate you so much. So you go and do it behind people's back anyway. And then everyone in the public, they're thinking you're not doing it, but then they're the one who's doing the molesting. They're the one who's doing the stealing. Cause my, I think, I don't know about my dad, but I know my mom did the stealing, like government stuff a lot behind people's back. And as a child, they're thinking you don't know, but you're a kid and you're watching. So you do know, and people are doing the molesting, all the crazy stuff like pornography that they're telling people not to do, but then they're doing it and they're suffocating other people. Like, I guess beside the power, like, I just don't understand why, because even in relationships, it's funny because I'm also thinking that people also I call it masochism. They want that control, because I know in some relationships, the minute on the dating app, they want the choking. They want someone to dominate them. They want someone to control their lives. They want someone to go on their phone and ask them. I had people breaking up with me because I wasn't asking them where they were or what they were doing. And I'm like, no, you're a free person. And as you mentioned, if you do something, you believe in something, you do something, you either gonna let other people be themselves. So I'm like, I know these things. So I just let people be themselves. So their reasoning is, oh, maybe you're going behind my back, or maybe you're cheating. That's why you're letting me. Maybe why are you letting me say this in public? Why didn't you telling me to shut up. And I'm like, no, you have your life. And they said, why are you letting me making a fool out of myself? I'm like, you having your life. I didn't think that was foolish, but if you thought that was foolish, it was up to you. Why should I control you right. to tell you to shut up? But at the end of the relationship though, I feel that then they would be like, oh, this person was controlling, this person, da, 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 but they secretly wanted it. And I tend to not be in a lot of relationship because I'm not controlling people. And then they break up with me because they think I'm not investing enough in them because I wasn't controlling them. And I've noticed exactly. in a mass religion, maybe people want that. And then because I don't understand how they're suffering through all of that, because I saw all of it and I just left. I'm not going to suffer for, I didn't masturbate until I was 25 because I didn't know these things. Yeah. I didn't know of it. If I knew, I probably would. But I know a lot of people who are young. I interviewed, they tell me they were doing it when they were 8. I was like, I didn't know it in my 20s. Like, that's. But it's good because they were doing it. I mean, it was good. They knew, but it was bad because they were doing it behind closed doors, which brought in the shame and the guilt and the judging themselves. So therefore, they were judging others and they were shaming others and guilting others because they were doing it to themselves. And of course, I had like other shame and guilt in my life, but I did not have religious shame and guilt. I had the fear, definitely, with the marketing and all this stuff. But all these things, like, I was pretty much, I want to say, dumb or brainwashed, because I didn't know, even when I left for different reasons, I didn't know a lot of this stuff until I was really in the worldly world. Then I was like, my eyes were opening and I was seeing things. And I was just like, I guess it was good because I didn't get into a lot of trouble. I didn't get into the drugs. I didn't get into sex is not bad, but in a sense of like making different women pregnant and all this stuff, or going to jail or hanging out with the wrong crowd, because I was so blind, literally blind, until I was 25. So it was good because I escaped all of this stuff. But a bad thing that could have happened, if it did happen, which it did not, I'll be so blind and doing all these things and not knowing what I was doing, because I was literally a robot. I didn't know a sense of self until I was 25, 26, which was, I think is dangerous.
Yeah, and that's right, because you go back and live it again, and what you should have got out of your system at 17 or 18, you're 30. You know, you want all the women, you want to have sex, you know. And I think about this, and Angela saw this. We used to go over to people's houses, and they were more educated, right? Imagine if you really told your kid, hey, you know, just so you know, you're going to have some things wake up when you're 17, 18, you know, maybe 16, who knows, you know, it's different for everybody, but you're going to have something wake up. It's going to feel sexual. It's going to be exciting. And it may even possess you for a little while, you know, but we have met so many people, haven't we, Angela, where the guy has said, my kid is going away sowing his wild oats at the college.
Like that's normal.
Like it's normal. You know what I'm saying?
Not churchy people, but people who are not unchurched. That's how they were.
They're sowing their wild oats. They're out there dating and holding hands and kissing and making love. But what if your dad told you, you know, if this thing gets real strong, you know, look, son, put on a rubber, take care of yourself. Don't get pregnant. Because, you know, if you get her pregnant, you're going to have this. You know, it's actually better if you marry. But should you not? But you imagine if they actually told us that.
Right.
The problem with it, why the monasteries are so full of sex addicted priests and there are a lot of pedophiles is because they've taken what's natural and they buried it.
Suppressed it. Yep.
Yeah, you can't get married.
Or they're running away from the fact that they feel that they're sinning in that area. So they go to the monastery thinking they're going to be done with that. Right. And it doesn't help.
And there's a lot of gays in the monastery. Yeah. That was one of my surprises when I went out to St. Benedict's Monastery to meditate. Every hermitage I went in, every saint on the wall, they said, oh, he was a homosexual. Oh, he was a homosexual. He was a homosexual. And I was like, oh. And then I realized homosexuality went along with the territory of monastery. And so, you get a bigger picture. But if you really informed your child and said, you're going to have this desire, and boy, this is going to, you're going to start looking at that other girl. She's going to look pretty, and you're going to be attracted, and you're going to want to hold her hand and kiss her, and kind of forewarn them, as opposed to abstinence and restricting. And here's what, you want to know how I got free from all that? Priest. He says, who put the desire in you to become fruitful and become many and fill the earth? God. God put the desire in me to be attracted to the opposite sex. And so for me to say, the watchtower says, don't look twice or you've already committed it in your heart. You've already committed adultery if you looked at it with lust. Who in the hell is not going to be guilty? We're all going to be guilty. God made women beautiful. God made women sexy. He made them softer. He made them different. He made it so you'd be attracted. So I think if religion would allow some humanness in people, that's the problem. They're not allowing this guy that bragged. He goes, man, I was at the gym and I could see through this lady's leotards and I could tell she didn't have no underwear. I'm going, my God, dude, you're 50 years old and you're still looking at a woman that way. Like you're really trying to see through her pants. And then he goes, but my boy, he masturbates, I'll knock him. And I'm going, holy hypocrite. And so this is the problem. Here we are, but see, everything we did was bad. Everything we did, we weren't supposed to do. We weren't supposed to do this, and we did it anyway. So by God, I'm going to take my kid and put him in the same box. And the truth is, what we resist persists.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah, yeah. What we resist persists. And remember, Viktor Frankl talked about that in that book, about that suppression. That oddly, I mean, it does talk about it in the Bible too, is that when you have I can't remember the exact words, but it means this, okay? When you give a person a whole lot of rules and every kind of thing that they shouldn't do, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that, they're eventually, it says, they're going to rebel against that. It says it right in the Bible, in the New Testament.
Even if it's a good thing for them.
Right. And so Viktor Frankl like made it really, really clear that the more oppressed a person is, the more they're going to go out and do that. So it's just what we do. So the more oppressed that a certain religion is, and like, so let's just say in the sexual realm of things, the more that person, knowing that they're not allowed to do it, the more they're going to go and do it. So they actually are creating the very thing that they're saying that they don't want you to be like. They're creating it by saying, don't. You guys had the worst ever in the sexual realm, I feel like, of don't touch the girl, don't touch her hand.
Don't look at her twice.
I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, what you're told not to do, everybody knows it's natural to go and do it you're just going to go do it anyway. That's why we noticed that these college kids raised by worldly parents who said my kid's going out sowing his oats. And guess what? They were done with it quickly.
When they were ready to get married, they were ready to settle down. Right. They dated a few girls. They've had sex. It's no mystery.
Yeah. They just were over that quick because they weren't told they couldn't do it. Just go out and sell your oats, boy. Just make sure you know, whatever they said. I mean, not that I condone that. Okay. Cause I really do wish that we did everything God's way and that it was one man, one woman, that you waited and you held yourself in chaste until you were married. That's God's way, really. But God knows we're not going to be like that. He made us. He knows we're going to go on our prodigal son journey, but he gave us reasons to be, I don't know. I feel like to feel humble because we come before him, Lord, I'm broken. I feel like I've done all these things. I don't know how to stop myself. I can't stop drinking. I can't stop doing the sex thing. I'm going in all the wrong places, doing all the wrong things. Oh my God, please God help me. And we finally ask for help finally. And so in a way, you know, it can be a beautiful thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say this too.
Okay, yeah.
The Christian church has a thing set up now, Zen, where it's called Celebrate Recovery. And it's a lot of times it's bigger than the church.
It's a 12-step group type
thing. And it's all men sexually addicted, most of it. I mean, there's drug ones, there's different ones. But most of the men say, I can't go home without going to a porn shop. I'm on internet porn, you know,
it's just regular fundamentalist
and,
church.
Yeah. And it's like, wow. And I can't help but think it's like what we're talking about, that if we had more of an allowance for a person to go out and stumble, like the Bible says, go learn good and evil, go learn love and not love. Because I've had escorts. I've had women like that. I've paid and I've realized that ain't love. In fact, I've had several, and here's what happened at the end of it. one day I had a girlfriend after all this, and she was a really nice gal. And she came over and she would take off her clothes and she would want a massage and all this stuff. And I'd give her a massage and then she'd want to do sex. And then she'd put on her clothes and leave. And I go, wait, where are you going? She goes, I told you. She says, I told you, if you fall in love with me, it ain't going to happen.
And we're over.
And I thought,
it's over.
This ain't love. And so she came over again and I took her out to a nice restaurant. And she goes, you gave me that look. And if you give me it one more time, I'm out of here. And I said, you don't like me for me? You don't want anything more than sex? Like, I'm being used for sex? And she came over the last time, and she had her shirt all undone. She got all undressed.
Chocolates.
And I said, no, I can't. And that was the end of that for me. All that addiction, all that shit. I was like, you know what? This ain't love. I want someone to wake up next to. I want someone to hold hands with. I want someone to share my story and journey. I want somebody that just loves me and will be with me no matter what. I don't want this garbage. But I had to go through escorts. I had to go through girlfriends. I had to go through. But now I learned. And so am I bad because I went down that road? Am I bad because, you know what I mean? So now I can watch other people, you know, knowing they got to go down some of those roads. But you made a good point, Zen. A lot of people hide out in the churches. That's why some of the most,
the bad behavior, because if you
in the church.
Know you're going to do these things and then you do it anyway. And then of course, when you learn and then you just like basically do better, once you know you do better and you allow yourself and others, then I feel like there'll be less raped and child rape, because it's something I didn't know about these things until like maybe 5 years ago when the Silent Lamb thing happened. And and I was just like, oh my God, it's breeding ground for that. Because if you allow people to be themselves, then they're going to take that sexual urge elsewhere or consensual adult things instead of like raping somebody in an alley or someone intoxicated or someone's child, because they're being suppressed and being shamed in guilt. And
I get in arguments with people on the six screens all the time because they say, oh, you know, pedophiles are pedophiles and they're different than all the other creeps. And I'm like, well, you know, when porn starts, you might look at a Playboy, right? Yeah, you know, a woman with a man, you know, look at the sex part of it. But then you don't, that don't satisfy anymore because you're in fantasy land, right? You got to see the woman with a woman now. And now you got to see the orgy, and then you got to see this. It's progressively degrading. Then the person's getting spanked, and then the person's put in a cage or whatever. But it gets more and more degrading. And I tried to say this on the six screens, that people will degrade down into children and different things. And they're like, oh, no, children are all. But it gets more and more perverted because you're in your head. You know what I'm saying? Whereas if you were to allow the sexual desire to come up as God created it to come up, right? God put it in us, become fruitful, become in and fill the earth. Allow yourself to have the release from masturbation and it not being bad. I tell them on the screen, I got a belly full of ulcers because of that. I used to have to go up and read the Watchtower. Mm-hmm. Imagine?
While doing bad things.
Yeah, you know. And I mean, I had hemorrhoids. My stomach was full of ulcers because I was so guilt-ridden. That was what was going to kill me.
Yes. There's a book, I think even Louis Tazy mentioned, talks about your thoughts create the disease. And also a book I read called The Body Keeps the Score, how your thoughts and the guilt and the shame and all this stuff, as you mentioned, with the ulcers and the hemorrhoids and all these things. And when I stop having these things, I don't have these maladies in my life, because I don't even have head maladies. Actually, last year, first time I ever experienced depression, because I had a relationship with somebody and then they left me, whatever. So I experienced that depression and I had some physical maladies because of it.
Yeah.
And it was like very interesting to see how definitely when you experience it, your thoughts, your brain will manifest physically. And a lot of people who don't believe that until they go through it, and hopefully, and it's not even like a belief thing, it's facts.
Yeah. Well, yes. Anita Morjani was just saying last night that it gives you an opportunity to say, well, my problem is that. It's that cancer, that disease, that whatever is going on in my body. And you just kind of, the focus goes away from what the real root problem is, which is that you're hurting deeply by this rejection or whatever it is, or this shame. And you just, mask you, and that way you can just blame it on the, my problem is just that I have this disease. No, it's something way deeper that you have to go get to the bottom of, but we haven't been trained to do that. We've been trained to go to the doctor and get medicine for it. And, then we get another disease and another
keep
disease.
Suppressing it.
You know, it's beautiful is once you pop out of it, once you pop out of this suppression and you allow yourself to go down the road, the wrong road. What the beautiful thing now is, now I can look at a beautiful woman or a sexy woman and say, she's sexy or beautiful, but I don't feel like I'm out of control. Like I'm looking for the minute that I can talk to her. And, you know, like the witnesses had it, you know, you remember, I don't know if you remember the Paradise book, the guy had his wife's hand and he's looking at the woman in the short skirt because there's so much suppression.
Right.
And so there's just something about that suppression, I think, that makes people out of control. And,
yes.
and you know, I went out of control when I got out of there after 20 some years, you know, I went out of control and just went down some crazy roads. And it was because I never got, you know, my dad, I kissed a girl one day saying goodbye to her. And my dad came down the road, had to have been 40 miles an hour, slid the car bumper all the way down to my hip and said, "Get in here, boy." He grabs me by the hair, pulls me in the car. "Don't you kiss that girl." Normal sexual desire repressed. Where, what am I going to do? I'm going into hiding. I'm going to the porn shop. I'm going into the place where nobody can find me. And then I'm going to be guilty and feel like shit. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like a horror story.
It hurt people, hurt people. I wanted to study the person who are guilty of the, maybe the murder or the sex trafficking, all this stuff. Cause I wanted to understand, just like Silence of the Lambs movie, understand where they're coming from, like what's their trauma, what's their childhood, and why they do certain things. And what, as I, because I like watching those things on YouTube, and it's when they always go to their childhood, is often some childhood trauma and how they're being suppressed and how everyone just discard their emotion, discard them as human being, and then they become this disgusting thing that society don't want, but society bred, knowing it or not. And the religion is doing the same thing. They're breeding, it's a breeding ground for all of this gross stuff. And it's saying, oh, if you do it, you are Satan anyway. And without taking responsibility to basically educate people. Because my dad, I had memories of like when I used to have wet dreams up until like in my 20s, because I didn't know what these were until girls would tell me what weird dreams were, and I felt really stupid. I was like, really? How could I not know that? And that's like prior to Google too, so I couldn't learn. So my dad, I remember one time, because I was getting them a lot in my underwear or whatever, and then I went to my dad and he told me it was Elmer's glue. Yeah, it was like this, and I believed him, and I told a girl that in my 20s, and she laughed at me. She was like, "Don't tell anybody that. That's the stupidest thing."
Oh my God.
And I couldn't believe, why can't you educate somebody instead of like lying to them? Like, because if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it the wrong way. If you educate me and I have the choice to do it the right way, or if I could choose to do it the wrong anyway, at least I'll know. But if I do it like as a robot the wrong way, get someone pregnant or rape somebody or molest somebody or kill somebody, because I didn't know. And I remember another episode where, because I think my sisters were playing in the window, and I was like, I've seen a cat, you know, like cats or dogs humping things. I was humping the couch. And and I screamed, "Oh my God, I'm peeing myself. But I was ejaculating.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what that was. And I was just like, oh, it's not pee. And as an adult, I'm thinking these things. And I was just like, are you effing kidding me? How they're saving you from all these human things, but they're doing harm.
Yes.
Yeah, disservice.
Can I say something along that line?
I got to tell you something.
Yeah. This is a conundrum. It's what you're talking about, getting really thinking you're crazy. I went to the elders and told them I was masturbating. And against the wishes of my friends, they're like, Dan, don't
tell them.
Don't go in there. Don't tell them. I said, no, it says the one that's sinning needs to go to the elders and tell the elders. Do you know, Zen, I went in before three elders. Some of them, I think, were 30, 40, maybe 50. And their glasses dropped down and they looked at me and they said, Brother Clark, it's obvious you're entertaining wrong thoughts. And I said, well, I'm not actually trying to entertain wrong thoughts. They just come in, you know, somehow I think of things and things happen. Obviously, you're entertaining wrong thoughts. And if you cannot control your thoughts, we're going to have to remove you from your ministerial servant. Or I think I was just reading the Watchtower at that time. And I was like, whoa. And so they brought out a big calendar. They brought out a big calendar. And they said, we're going to put an X on the calendar here, Dan. And we're going to start today, and we want you to come back next week and tell us how you did. Can you imagine? So I come back next week, and I said, well, it wasn't that good. I didn't tell them how bad it was, but you know what I'm saying? I said, well, you know, I slipped up a couple more times, and your glasses dropped down, and they're like, so you're still entertaining wrong thoughts, Brother Clark. Well, we're going to have to remove you from your Watchtower reading and the sound and the mic handling. I'm like, okay. And they said, and if it happens again, see black and white, law, legalism. And I'm like, okay. And so I went to see him again after that. And they said, we're going to do an announcement that you have conduct on becoming a Christian and we're going to put you on public reproof. And I said, okay. So they put me on public reproof. Now, here's where the mental illness comes in. What are you going to do? One, you think you're part of Satan's world. You can't get control of this thing. They obviously all have control. Not one of them said I did the same damn thing. Not one of them.
Or that I struggled.
None of them were honest with me. And I'll tell you something, Zen. We did a television show and we blew their asses out of the water. It was called Are You Too Crazy for God? And I said, when are you pastors going to get real? When are you going to tell people you've done it and you're still doing it? And boy, they come out and they turned off all the cameras. It was on a big show called what? Cherie Peters, Are You Too Crazy for God?
No, it was Celebrating Life and Recovery.
Oh, Sin, if you have a link, I would love to watch that.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? They shut it off and they said, we can't play this. And then I said, I went to a woman and talked to her about it. Turn off the cameras. And they turned off the cameras again. And they said, you can't go to a woman. I said, well, what man has got the balls to say they do it too, or they still struggle with it, or they're human? And boy, they kept turning the camera off. So we didn't know if they were going to play it. We went down to Illinois. And they played it. They put a PG-13 on it. They said the only way. First time ever. They said, we'll play it. We'll put a PG-13 on it. It was the most watched television show that was ever played on their network. And they knew us everywhere. It was called 3ABN. And it was the most watched thing because it was real. And that was the problem. And that's why I hurt. Because what happened after that, even before that, when I was young, my dad would never talk about it. So I'd ask the neighbors. I'd say, what's this thing going on? Well, you're homosexual. You're gay. I am. Yeah. You know, they'd be joking, but I was like, am I gay?
Maybe not. Maybe.
Am I gay? Is something wrong with me? And then I was like, well, I must be demon possessed. Now, see, this is where the mental illness comes in, Zen. This is where the mental illness comes in, because who's going to rescue you from this mind, from this body that keeps wanting food, right? It's kind of like food you eat, right? You get an appetite again. Well, it's the same with sexual desire. It comes up again and you think I'm possessed. So I did really believe at one point I was possessed by Satan, that I was just the devil incarnate because I masturbated. Well,